I talk about financial things on here from time to time. I, for one, am a natural saver and have been investing since I was 19 years old. But for many people, it can be confusing to know where to start. And also, there isn't a sense of urgency, especially if you're young. It's hard to imagine the future actually happening and that it's important to work on that goal right now. And for a lot of people, you think you need a lot of money to invest and not just little bits on a regular basis. And so that can feel overwhelming and that it's not actually possible. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. It's important to start investing wherever you are financially, whatever age you are. Even if you're too late, it's still a smart idea to make that an automatic part of your budget and financial life. It can become a habit, and Acorns makes that so much easier. Head to acorns.com/farmhouse or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement may not be representative of all clients. Tier 1 compensation provided. Compensation provides an incentive to positively promote Acorns. View important disclosures at acorns.com/farmhouse. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Please consider your objectives, risk tolerance, and Acorns fees before investing. Acorns Advisors LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are provided to clients of Acorns by Acorns Security LLC. Member FINRA SIPC. For more information, visit acorns.com.
My big trick with the whole online business and the kids and the family is, one, having some designated time. There's not like infinite hours stretched out before us, but there are a few hours that we have said, this is what I'm going to need in order to make this certain content for our business. So we have those hours, but then whenever those hours come, I need to know ahead of time what I need to get done during those. And that is so key. If you have a block of time and you don't really know what you're going to do with it, you can start second guessing yourself. You can start overthinking it.
My name is Lisa, mother of 8 and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. It is a rainy day. I hear thunder outside. I have a cup of coffee. I have a list of questions that you have asked over in the question box over at bit.ly/SFL questions. I believe that is capital S, capital F, capital L, lowercase questions. Also, some were submitted on YouTube, on Instagram. We tried to get it out everywhere so that everybody could have a chance to submit their questions. Again, if you have more, make sure to go put it there in that Google form at bit.ly/SFL questions. It'll also be linked in the description box with the show notes. But I am going to just do a solo episode, a solo chat, and answer a lot of those questions. The first one that comes up, I'm debating even talking about this because I don't feel like I have a super strong opinion on it, but I guess I'll share it briefly. Please talk about having your babies in church. They said that now that we're a family has talked about this and I have been on their podcast, I'm going to be on it again. I actually get to go see them in person because I'm heading out their way to be at the Modern Homestead Expo. So anyways, love their podcast. So if I disagree with them, don't think it's because I don't like them, because I definitely do and I respect them. They both came from large families. They both really are very intentional and very serious, which is admirable. But my parenting style is much more like yours. Feed on demand, go with baby's flow. I have a 3.5-month-old baby boy, and our church has been so tricky. He also doesn't take a pacifier. I'm not leaving him in the nursery for a multitude of reasons, but I'd love to know what you do and all your practical tips for tiny babies in service. Okay, so I go to a Baptist church. It's a very small church. And they're very baby friendly. So everybody in the church, you know, they'd be okay. It's not like the baby can't make a whimper and people be mad about it. That's not an issue at all at our church. However, of course, as a mother, you do feel guilty because, I mean, you know, you can't disrupt everybody else's church just because your baby is fussy. So I'm not saying my church would tell us to leave. They definitely would not. But also I do leave to be respectful. And this is a battle that I got really excited about fighting whenever I was first a mom. So my first couple of kids, I was very, very serious. I'd keep them in church. If they acted up, I would take them out, deal with that, and then bring them back. And it was such a struggle. And then after lots of years of being a mom, so I have a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, an 11-year-old, on down through 8 kids, I learned that pretty much no matter what I did, whether I brought them out during service, brought them to nursery, disciplined them, made them stay in, took it very seriously, no matter what, they all can sit through church at age 6 very easily, just because by that time it's very easy. They, you know, they're old enough to understand that they should be quiet in a setting like that. And so I'm definitely in the camp now, and this is right or wrong, I don't really know. I'm sure that people have strong opinions, but I guess for the mom who feels very overwhelmed and stressed by this whole thing, like, gotta keep your kids in church. If you don't do that, because, you know, this is a young mom asking me this question. So you only have a 3.5-month-old. And so the very fact that you're thinking about this means you're already kind of worried about it. You're realizing it's kind of tough. Your baby's only 3 months old. And I just want to tell you, don't worry. They will eventually sit through church and it'll totally be okay. So I wish I had not stressed about that. I think I heard some very strong opinions on why that was so important. And it was very hard because, as you said, little kids don't like to go to nursery. They don't like to sit through church. So you're left with this conundrum. And I can tell you that my sister, she has 6 kids. We, you know, we compare notes nonstop. She does the same thing. And we both think it's going to be okay. So for what I do right now in this current season of life, I just went to church this last Sunday. And what I did was I did actually bring my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old to nursery, because at our church, under age 5 can go to nursery. It's a tiny church. There's like 4 kids in the nursery. I also work nursery during Sunday school. So I take my youngest 2 into nursery during Sunday school with me. And then my 2-year-old, up until probably like the last 2 weeks, never went to nursery. And so it was kind of a problem. Either I would go in there during service or one of my older 2 kids, he will be okay with one of us 3 being in there with him. Or Luke or I, one of us will go out of service. So I'm just telling you that that has been recent. This is not like he's been going to nursery that long. But I did take Victor with me. I've never left a baby under age 1 in the nursery. I'm not really saying that's bad. I just don't really feel like they would know what to do with them because they still nurse all the time, you know, all that. Also, Victor usually sleeps. So what I did this last Sunday, my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old went to nursery. All the other kids went into church with us. No problem. They sit quietly. They listen. They can handle an hour like that. And Victor made it about halfway. And then I had to leave to go to the lobby. I put him in my wrap. I got him to sleep. I listened to the sermon in the lobby while Luke was in the service with the other 5. So we had 5 in church, 2 in nursery, 1 in my wrap out in the foyer area. So all that to say, I don't think this is worth stressing over. It used to stress me out a lot. I think there are so many things in motherhood that are like this, that if you just go with the flow, at some point in life, you're going to look back and it's not going to have been any big deal. And so don't, especially when you only have a 3-month-old, don't worry. If your baby isn't going to be quiet in church, there's really nothing you can do about it. You're not going to be able to discipline them and make them sit in church. Also, if, you know, hopefully your church has some kind of system like ours, where they have a speaker out in the lobby or the foyer or whatever, where you can listen while also rocking the baby. I also bring a nursing cover. And so if the baby is really young, like 3 months, 100% would just nurse them through the entire service. When they're 9 months, like Victor, they don't really nurse the whole service anymore. Now, if they take a passy, sometimes they'll do that. My sister's kids do that. So she, a lot of times, can keep all her kids in church. But if she does, if that doesn't work out, she and her husband just take turns going out in the lobby. However it works for your family. I say just do whatever works. It's really, I don't feel like that's going to make like a really lasting impact. And that's just my personal opinion. And that's just coming from somebody who's 5 oldest kids sit through church, no problem. And I'm actually pretty convinced the 4-year-old, just based on his personality and other settings he's been in, he would be 100% fine too. But there's a nursery, it's fun, and I don't really feel like he's going to get a whole lot out of it. Next question. Hi, Lisa. My question is, how do you structure your day? I'm a homeschool mom of 3, and my husband is finishing his PhD. I work part-time as a fitness instructor and am working on building an online business to help postpartum women regain core strength. We plan on having more kids, but I feel like I can't spend the necessary time on the business in the midst of everyday meal prep, housework, homeschool. I would love to hear how you structure your days early on and how you structure them now that some of your kids are older. How do you manage loving your family and giving them attention they need while also running a business? Thank you for your heart to share and for putting out so many inspiring and beautiful ideas. Well, thank you very much for that. So the way I currently structure my day, and this rhythm has been probably with us for about the last 6 years. Luke has now been home from his job for 6 years this month. So we have gotten into a routine of how this all works. And when he first came home, it was very different. But little parts of the day change, like whether we're spending time outside and so it's quieter in the house. Lately, a lot more audio has been in my videos because there are kids just outside of my kitchen window, but inside the house, it's not that loud. Whereas in the winter, whenever I'm editing my videos, I just put them all to silent, all the clips straight to silent, and then edit it from there and don't use any audio. So just little things like that change. Things change like when I have a baby, if there's a morning nap, an afternoon nap, you know, we start to kind of get into a flow of how all of that works and getting work done in times when they're not awake that needs to be done when toddlers or babies aren't awake. So little things change, but the basic structure of the day and how it's working right now in April, May, 2024 is in the morning, we're still doing school. So in the morning, now I don't have a certain wake up time because I have not sleep trained Victor yet. And that's something that's very much on the horizon for me. Usually around somewhere between 9 months and a year, typically I will sleep train them because babies really take advantage of the fact that you will get them anytime they cry. So I'm currently in a season of not being able to sleep very well at night. So Luke will usually get up in the morning with the earliest risers, which are the baby and the toddler. So around six, I'd say on average, sometimes earlier, every once in a while, they'll give us a little bit more time. He will take them into the kitchen and there's a double French door. And so I just keep sleeping until I wake up, which I think works really great for us. It gives me peace of mind overnight knowing that if the baby does really, really bad, at least I don't have somewhere I have to be or do like right away in the morning. So I like the no alarm clock life. Then we will do breakfast. So this morning I made my Eggy oatmeal, which I shared recently over on my YouTube channel. Basically, it's like half oatmeal, half eggs. It tastes like oatmeal. It's sweetened. The kids basically think they're eating oatmeal, but yet they're getting the protein addition of eggs. Clean that up. And then while that's getting cleaned up and I'm starting to prep lunch, the kids will work on school. So two of their kids do math on the computer. And then Luke sits down with one of our kids that needs more one-on-one help with a workbook for math. We basically are tag teaming school all the way until noon when we eat lunch. So usually I prepped it throughout the morning while the kids are all around while we're doing school. I will do lunch as well. We eat at noon. Then after noon, the baby and the toddler go down for a nap. Victor already woke up, so I'm actually in the room where he would sleep, but he already woke up from his nap, so that didn't last long. So again, there's a variable there. But Luke can take him. He's working in the garden at this exact moment, and I can get a quiet moment to shoot a podcast. Typically, the way I structure my work hours are between 1 and 4, Monday through Thursday. So those are the times that I'll take a podcast interview, I'll meet with somebody on my team, I will photograph something, I'll film something. Now, sometimes I'll get my camera out and film while I'm just making lunch or something while the kids are doing school and all of that, I'll set my camera up. But a lot of times I like to reserve that filming for the afternoon. And then I'll also spend that 1 to 4 working on edits, doing photography, interviews, solo episodes, all the stuff that I need for it to be quiet. After that, we sometime in that 1 to 4, the toddler wakes up from his nap. I'll usually bring him out to Luke. Right now it's outside time, so that makes it really easy. In the winter, it's kind of hard because we won't have kids sleeping, but yet I'll still need a quiet moment, and that's really difficult to find inside. So it's a lot easier, a lot more gentle in the summer for our schedule. So basically the way that our day is structured is we do school, we have a work block, a lot of outside time for kids during that slash naps, and then we have evening time where we'll do chores, we will make dinner, clean up, and then we start working on bedtime routine around 7. So I think to sum it up, it sounds like you are very, very busy right now. So not only is your husband finishing up his degree, a PhD, so that's difficult. You already have outside commitments with your online, no, not your online business, your fitness instructor. You're trying to do the online business. Honestly, I feel like it's too much. And so if it feels like you don't have another hour in your day, that probably is true. Now, if you're home and you can't figure out how to get things done while you're at home, while the kids are there. That's a different challenge entirely. But it sounds to me like there probably just aren't that many hours where you're home, where you have time to work on something, and that's a challenge. So I think with a lot of things, there has to be, something has to go. So in your situation, and you know, obviously you can do whatever you want, but I think I would probably pick between any of the outside of home things and the online business, because as long as we're home, we can make all of it work with the situation that we're currently in. But as soon as we leave, like we have plans tomorrow, we have things we have to do, we have to be out of the house, and already there, I'm making my work day way lighter. So I make a list every single day of the things I need to accomplish during that afternoon work block. Like today's block said, record solo podcast episode. That's what I need to accomplish sometime between 1 and 4. That has to happen. But tomorrow, I can already see that I can't put very many things in that afternoon slot because we're already going to be out of the house for the day. It's going to get chaotic. We have to do lunch. We're not going to be home to make the lunch. We'll probably mess up nap time because kids will fall asleep on the way home from the thing. So with that, it just might be that this isn't the time to start an online business unless there are some outside obligations that you could lighten up. Also, like with your husband getting his PhD, that's not something that you can really change. So not having that support probably makes it difficult. Now, if there's a certain time that you can count on him being home, like on a Saturday or whatever, you could plan to get a whole bunch of stuff done on that day for your online business. My big trick with the whole online business and the kids and the family is, one, having some designated time. We set out expectations. Everybody knows mom has the house during these hours. There's not a lot of those hours, so it's not like I get it all day. I think whenever Luke was going to quit his job, it felt like, oh, you know, I'll have all this time. But still, there just isn't. There's so many family obligations. There's homeschool. There are so many things that both parents need to be involved in. And so there's not like infinite hours stretched out before us. But there are a few hours that we have said, this is what I'm going to need in order to make this certain content for our business. So we have those hours, but then whenever those hours come, I need to know ahead of time what I need to get done during those. So if you have, maybe it won't be like my schedule, maybe you won't get some afternoon hours, or maybe if your kids are little, you will because you'll have nap time. That's what I did whenever I was first starting my business. I knew I had nap time, but before that time came, I knew what I was going to work on. And that is so key, because if you have a block of time and you don't really know what you're going to do with it, you can start second guessing yourself. You can start overthinking it. This can happen so easily, because just like for today, whenever I was sitting down to do the podcast, I knew I had to do that. I didn't yet know what questions I was going to answer. And sometimes I think, what more do I have to say? I've already done this podcast a million times. I've already shared basically everything, but this is what is on my to-do list. And in order to check it off, I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to be able to overthink the action I'm going to take. I'm not going to be able to second guess it. This is what has to get done today. I know it. It's been in my schedule since Sunday, whenever I lay out my week. I knew that I needed to do this. And so it makes it to where the action you take is very direct. It's very quick. It can get done without you having to throw in any fears or doubts. I totally know how a lot of times with a lot of things that you want to do, it's not so much not having the time to do it, because we actually do have a lot of time, especially if we're home all the time. It's really figuring out the how and the what. Like, what am I going to do with my time? And then how am I going to accomplish it? Where can I fit that in? And I have been very good about detailing that out so that I'm not caught off guard. And I have a little block of time where everybody's sleeping and all the stars align. And I think, oh, what am I going to do now with my time? I know what to do with my time.
Shopify has already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/farmhouse, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/farmhouse to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/farmhouse. I have used herbs and supplements to support my hormone health for many years, and so that's why I was so excited to find this Hormone Harmony supplement by Happy Mammoth, who happens to be the sponsor of this episode. You can visit happymammoth.com and use promo code FARMHOUSE for 15% off your first order. Several of the ingredients in the formula, like maca root and chasteberry berry, I have personally used with great success, but there are also so many more that work together to support hormone health. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalance can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. And the biggest benefit is feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% on your entire first order at happymammoth.com with the code FARMHOUSE at checkout. That's happymammoth.com with the code FARMHOUSE.
I think you also asked, how did I do it back when I had three kids? So back when I had three kids, I had very structured days with the afternoon naps because they were all little, and that made it so much easier. So we had room time / nap time. So when I had three kids, which I didn't actually start my business till I had four kids, but at that time, I believe they were 6, 4, 2, and newborn. No. Yes, that's what they were. When I started my business, they were 6, 4, 2, and newborn. So I had the newborn in the wrap, the 2-year-old napped, and the 6 and 4-year-old just did quiet time in their room during the afternoon. And so I made sure to work on that during that time. I made sure to get dishes and lunch and laundry all done outside of that block. And then during that block, I had a plan for what I was going to do. And then I just worked on it. No questions asked. And so that's how I always structured it. Hopefully that helps. I mean, we all have such different situations that it's difficult to assess what yours is, because in a lot of ways your life, even though I do have 8 kids, does sound like it has a lot more moving parts because we are just all home all the time. And when that happens, it's actually fairly laid back. People know what they need to do, where they need to be, what they need to work on. And that's not to say there's not challenges with it at all, but it's not go, go, go. We got to be here. We got to be there. This person's here. We're kind of just all home. And so it makes it really simple. And to your question about wanting to have another child, but I feel like I can't spend the necessary time on the business. And this, I'm just going to give my opinion. I guess this is my show, so I can do that. I personally would not overthink that. And I'm just sitting here as someone who is approaching age 40, and I spent all of my 20s, all of my 30s having babies. I'm just really glad that I did that, even in the imperfect life situations that happened throughout that time. So, you know, I could have overthought the workload, the homeschool, the financial situation of it all. And really, we didn't. We kind of just kept putting one foot in front of the other. And looking back, I'm so glad. So that's to say, if I were you, I would just, if you are planning to have another child, I'd probably just have the child and figure that out later. But that's just me. I know some of you are going to completely disagree with that, but that is personally what I would do. If you were my sister, I would tell you, have the baby. That's what I'm saying. Someone says, this is a simple question. Can you use a bread machine to knead/rise sourdough instead of doing stretch and folds? Yes, you can. So you can head over to farmhouseonboone.com. That's my blog, if you're not familiar, and search bread machine sourdough, and it's there. And my sister, I ended up giving her my bread machine because I actually prefer the stretch and folds, but she has worked that thing to death. She has done the recipe hundreds of times in that bread machine. It's just very straightforward. You pour the ingredients in, press a couple buttons, and it's very hands-off. So yes, absolutely. Someone says, have Roots and Refuge on the podcast and have Amy Fuel on the podcast. Those are two separate questions or recommendations. They've both been on there. So make sure to go over to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast on either your favorite podcast player or on YouTube and search for those names. Or if you just put up in the YouTube search bar, Simple Farmhouse Life, Amy Fuel, Simple Farmhouse Life, Roots and Refuge, you will find those. Okay, I always get so many baby sleep questions. And honestly, you all should go somewhere else for that. Currently have a 9-month-old who wakes up about 8 to 10 times per night. And I know what I typically do. So I usually just deal with it, spoil them rotten, put them in my bed, latch them on all night long, or put them in their crib, nurse them every time they wake up all night long until I feel like it's time. We're approaching that for sure, but I never want to do it too early because if I do it too early, it doesn't work. I have to try it again. But I usually do end up doing some form of cry it out. I know that people hate that, but I have never had a child magically sleep through the night at any age. So I've gone much longer. They still never do it. They just want to nurse literally the entire night. And so for me, at some point, it just has to happen. They need the sleep. I need the sleep. We haven't gotten there yet. Now for naps, it's the same. So Victor has been in a very good nap pattern for a while, usually somewhere around 7 or 8 months, probably, maybe a little bit earlier sometimes. I think Victor was a little bit earlier because he just would not sleep in my wrap for very long periods of time. I realized that they need a nap schedule. And so I will nurse them. I will lay them down. If their eyes pop open, they start crying, I just walk away. And usually it's not too long before they fall asleep. And then after several times of doing that, after a few times of doing that, they know the whole routine. I put his little sleep sack on him, nurse him, lay him down, and I walk away. He might fuss for 5 to 10 seconds, or he might not fuss at all. Typically at this point, he doesn't fuss at all. So the nap thing is wonderful, but we have not tackled the night. And for some reason, those are very separate for my kids and probably for all kids if it's like that for all of mine. So I usually will do the nap for a while, and then it's a while before I will do the night thing. I have plans and thoughts about how I might do it this time. I might actually put them somewhere else in the house because I think having him right next to me, even though I have a curtain around his crib, still they know that you're right there. And that's been a bit of a challenge because we've never had a separate room for the baby. And we've done like the bathroom and things like that. But currently where we are, we don't have a separate space. We don't have a closet or anything or a bathroom. And so it's a bit of a challenge, but I know that once I do it, it takes like 1 or 2 nights and that's it. And then the baby sleeps the 12 hours. And my babies always ultimately are great sleepers from about 1 on, but it's just getting there. And we're at the tail end of it now. So yeah, I'm probably not your sleep person. I will tell you that several friends of mine use and recommend Taking Care of Babies. I have never tried those. Actually, my husband and oldest 2 boys recently went to a comedy show, and this comedian made a joke about his wife paying for sleep programs. And the joke, Luke tried to relay it to me. I didn't actually hear the comedian. All I heard was his relaying the joke to me. But he said that his wife basically paid for someone to tell them to put the baby to bed earlier and to not get them and let them cry. And if that's not the truth, all the sleep stuff that I've ever read, they always are telling you to put the baby to bed earlier. You're getting the baby overtired. That's the problem. And I definitely have figured that out. I feel like as long as our last nap and the bedtime are close together, they sleep later in the morning, they sleep better. And then ultimately at some point you have to teach them that you're not going to get them. And so you can pay the big bucks for a course, but I really don't know that there's a magical solution. I know we want to believe there's something that we can do that doesn't cause the stress of having to sleep train. And I just personally have not found it. Now, if you start really early and you create all of these patterns, it might be a little bit of a gentler, you know, tie severed at the whole nighttime thing, but that requires a lot of work on that end. And for me personally, it's not worth it because I enjoy baby wearing. I enjoy co-sleeping and nursing on demand and all of that stuff. And so I'd rather do all of that and then have one or two nights where I sleep train them when they're much older. So that's just been my style. And I don't know. I think the reason we buy sleep coaches is because we want someone to tell us it's okay. And I feel that. I want one of my friends to say, or my sister, or just somebody to say, okay, age 9 months, just don't get him. Don't get him. Because I'm still trying to back out. But I think that's why we buy sleep coaches, is just tell us it's going to be okay. I know the advice is obvious. I know what needs to happen, but I want someone to come alongside me and say, this is okay. So we'll see. My sister says, the one who has a baby 10 days apart from me, that she's going to do it at 9 months as well. So maybe we'll just like hold hands and do it together. But I know it'll be fine. It always is. I'm not worried about it. I get asked this all the time and I don't really know. I don't know. Somebody says, why are the beds in your house floating away from the walls? I've never seen that before. Honestly, I don't know. I thought, is that weird? I guess that is weird. It seems to me like you need to get, I know why. Sorry, I'm looking at my bed right now and realizing why that's the case. There's windows in our house behind every single bed because it's an old house and there's tons of windows. And I don't think you would put the bed right up on a window, right? That doesn't really make sense because there's curtains. So then you'd smash the curtains. Also, our house, it has oddly big bedrooms. I feel like all the bedrooms could be a lot smaller, but it just, the bedrooms are so big. So if they're up against the wall, you'd have 10 feet probably between the end of the bed and the other wall. So I think whenever you aren't in a house, even when you just see it on camera, I know this because I've been to so many different people's houses who I first saw on the internet, it just feels different. And I think that's probably the reason. So I think it just feels better in this house because of the windows, because of the size of the rooms. So it's not like some big decision, like this is the reason I have these big opinions on this. It's just, I guess, what works best in this particular home. Oh, how do you keep your van clean with a big family? We're a family of seven and we have a 12 passenger van and I have a hard time keeping it clean. She says, I give myself grace knowing that, and then it cut off. I don't know how to get this spreadsheet to show the rest of this question. We don't. So if you were to go in our van and go under all the seats, it'd probably be horrific. That's just something that I feel like I used to worry about all the time. Now that's not to say we don't clean it out. We try, like every time we get home from somewhere, I tell every kid, come in with full hands. Nobody's allowed to come in the house with just nothing. You have to bring stuff in, shoes, socks, trash, all the things. So, okay, it's not destroyed, but it can be. I wouldn't put it past us. That can happen. We don't have like a cleaning schedule or, you know, every Saturday we clean the van. It's kind of on the fly. Like everybody bring a bunch of stuff in. And then usually sometime after a while, I'll realize that little bits of things got left here and there when you do like a full clean out, but it's not all that clean at all. I love the beige stoneware bowl that you use all the time. Where you got it, or was wondering where you got it. So I get those at antique shops. I try not to pay more than $20 or $30 for them because they are very breakable. We have a cast iron sink and we have quartz countertops. So at some point, every bowl that enters this house will break. It's just a matter of time. So I buy them every time I see them at an antique shop. I'll even, if I have too many, I'll still grab more because they will at some point get broken. I don't really baby them, but I also just don't pay a whole lot for them so that it doesn't break my heart whenever they break, because we use them for compost. We use them for mixing. We have kids everywhere. So that does happen. Okay. At the last question I want to take, because this is probably going to be a long-winded one, is on the dairy cow. So I got an email and I told her that that was a really good idea for an episode and that I would love to address it. So here's the email. Hi Lisa, I don't have any social media, so I wasn't sure how to throw this out there and hope that maybe you will see this. Again, if you do want to ask questions, don't forget bit.ly/SFL. Those are capital questions. You can enter them there. This lady did email me and that's totally fine too. Lisa@farmhouseonboone.com if you want to do that. Okay, I was wondering if you would consider doing a podcast episode on your family milk cow journey. You haven't said a lot, but I know you've occasionally mentioned struggles with your Guernsey cow's milk flavor and then your Jersey cow now being dry. I would love to hear your journey and compare and contrast to my own. We also have a few milk cows and a large family. I had grand ideas of raw milk and homemade dairy products and cheese, and honestly, it feels like a big flop. I don't love my cheeses. I now have two cows with subclinical mastitis and a third who doesn't want to give milk calf sharing. It started out so lovely and has become quite overwhelming. I may be reading into your situation all wrong, but you always hear the lovely milk cow scenarios online, and I'm finding my reality to be a bit different 4 years into the process. Okay, so I have had a similar experience to this email, to be completely honest. So I've talked about the whole dairy cow journey on here a lot and on my YouTube channel, and I don't feel like I have it completely figured out. We have been milking animals between goats and cows for 5 years now, and although I didn't really enjoy milking goats, and I do like milking a dairy cow so much better, and I love the milk, and I love the abundance of it, in this current season, we are not milking cows. The reason, well, there's a few reasons. One is, and I have not shared this on YouTube, I know this is YouTube if you're watching the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast on YouTube, but on my much larger channel, Farmhouse on Boone, I just anticipate the backlash of certain things. So our dairy cow actually did pass away. So we do not currently have a cow at all. The Guernsey is at my sister's farm and she's bred out there. I don't think we're going to really milk her though anymore. And our Jersey was doing great. She started to dwindle on her milk production. We noticed she was losing weight and she was also declining in her production. And so we dried her off. We made the decision that we're going to dry her off, give her lots of alfalfa, lots of grain. We started feeding her extra grain per the vet's recommendation. Well, she ended up taking a turn for the worst. And we think the vet believes, we did not actually conduct an autopsy or anything, but the vet believes that she got something called hardware disease, which means that they find somewhere on the farm something metal and it gets down into their rumen sac and it can cause like a cascade of so many different issues and they ultimately do die. So that is what we believe happened. We do not know how she got that. And our vet did try to put a magnet. That's actually something they do. And some people, some larger dairy operations we've learned since, put a magnet down in their cow's stomach just to attract the metal in case that would happen, because it's actually fairly common. Our vet said he sees this, I thought he said 30 times a year. That would be crazy. Is that what he said? It was a lot. It was a lot of times per year that he sees this. So it's not out of the realm of normal, but that really doesn't have a whole lot to do with this topic because we can get another dairy cow should we choose. I still have a lot to share about it. And that's not actually why we aren't currently milking. We dried her off before we knew that this was happening. So she did not die. And then that's why we stopped getting milk. We dried her off and then she died shortly after. It was not mastitis. It wasn't that. We dried her off properly. This is why I hate this subject, because I know that no matter what I say about this, somehow people are going to think this is our fault. It's not. We did all the things with the vet. We did not neglect her health. Something happened and we think it was that hardware disease. Either way, as far as the milk situation goes, you can calf share. And that means that the calf and the cow stay together. You can separate them at night, milk in the morning. And that gives you an amount of milk that's very appropriate for a normal family, something like 1 gallon to 2 gallons per day. We did that for a long time. We did that for 18 months with our cow's first calf, Ginger. That worked really well for our family. It's a bit of a deal at night separating the cow and the calf, so that makes for a lot of extra work. So the second time she had a calf, I thought it'll be a lot better if we don't calf share, because then at night, instead of separating the cow and the calf, which also takes 20 minutes of time, if we just milk, then we get double the milk, but you're still doing that same amount of work, which actually does make a lot of sense. But the amount of milk you get is overwhelming. And so then enter cheese making. I took on that because that actually is a great way to preserve milk. Loved the process. I loved doing it. But once the cheese is aged to the proper amount, we did not like the cheese. And I don't really feel like I did it wrong because it didn't mold. It didn't get, there's a lot of things that you can see along through the process. Like it can get gassy and airy and it can like blow up. And that means that something went way wrong. We ate it so we didn't get sick, but we just didn't like the taste of the cheese. And so that solution for a large amount of milk kind of went away. So with calf sharing, the downside is that you spend a lot of time separating the cow and the calf every single night. You don't get anything from that. All you get is the couple gallons of milk, but you also have to milk in the morning. So there's 20 minutes of work at night, 20 minutes of work in the morning. You get about 2 gallons of milk, but you get no cream. Then you have where you don't calf share, you have to milk at night, you have to milk in the morning, you get tons of cream, tons of milk. I love that feeling in the spring of abundance. You have eggs from all of your hens because it's daylight later. You have all of this milk and cream, making butter, making yogurt and kefir and ricotta. And I love all of that. But still, we end up with so much milk. And I give it to my sisters, but then I have to remember to bring the cooler and like find spaces in all of our fridge for all this milk. And it just gets to be way too much because in our fridge, sometimes we have 10 gallons of milk, which we should just get another fridge. But it's dealing with all of the milk, all of the shuttling of milk around. And ultimately, I have local farms that I can get raw milk. So the same product from at any time without having to waste, not really waste, because I end up giving it to people or making cheese. I never really wasted it, but it's a lot of work. And so I guess I haven't thought of a particular solution. We have talked about getting another dairy cow. It's not that we're never going to do it again. Kind of thinking later this fall. So this summer, we have 3 different trips planned. I'm speaking at the Modern Homestead Expo, which by the way, the Melissa Norris, who is doing the Homestead Expo, she gave me a coupon code. So this would be a really good time to share that. So you can use code FarmhouseOnBoone10 if you want to go to the Modern Homesteading Conference. It is up in Idaho. So if you live somewhere in that vicinity, I will be speaking. Lots of great speakers. So it's going to be a great conference. I'm looking forward to it. That's end of June, early July. No, I think it's just end of June. But so we have that planned. We have a trip to Colonial Williamsburg planned. We have a trip to Michigan planned. And so we have a lot going on this summer. And so I thought this will be a good time just to not have a dairy cow. I am and have been looking at farms. I want a dairy cow who would potentially calve after all of those trips. So if we bought a dairy cow, she calved after that, we could have a milk cow for, you know, starting this fall until forever. And I think next time around, so my solution for this, I do believe that we will calf share again. It definitely was overwhelming without having any break at all. If you don't have a calf share, you have to milk morning and night. No exceptions. There's no just, you know, skipping a milking. Whereas if you do calf share, as long as you don't pluck the calf and wait 12 hours to milk, you don't have to milk. So if you go on a little weekend trip, just leave the cow and calf together. The downside is you don't get much cream. So there's really no like fabulous solution. I think the best solution is if you are interested in selling raw milk. So a friend of mine where we get our milk locally, she has, I believe, 3 dairy cows. She milks them all twice a day and she gets $15 a gallon for the milk. So if you are interested in selling milk or even just having one family dairy cow, not calf sharing, milking twice a day and then selling the extra, that would be a really good little side business to get into. I didn't really have any interest in selling it because I have so much other businessy things going on that I didn't really want to get into all of that. And so it just left us with too much extra. And even, you know, even cheese making, it's a lot of work. Like that's what I spent a lot of mornings and pretty much half the day doing was dealing with all the dairy. It's fun. It's satisfying work, to be honest. I really like it. I like that the kids have the experience of making something like that from farm all the way to finish. Butter, yogurt, kefir, ricotta, mozzarella. I'm still into it. It's not that I'm not. It has been a little bit hard having the dairy cow die, having too much excess. And to be completely honest, I am enjoying the break of the dairy cow and we're still drinking raw milk because a local friend has it. So that's currently what's happening. It's not that we won't get back into it at some point, but it isn't all sunshine and rainbows with the dairy cow thing. I think anybody would know that going in. It's not beyond doable. I did enjoy it. We did it for a really long time, but it has its pros and its cons. And so that's what I'm sharing about that. All right. Well, I hope that you enjoyed this episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. I sometimes forget that there are people on here who maybe found this podcast through Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Amazon Music and don't know anything about my brand. So if you don't follow along, I have this podcast, Simple Farmhouse Life, of course, but I also have a YouTube channel, my main YouTube channel and blog called Farmhouse on Boone. So you can follow along with our daily life, with new recipes on farmhouseonboone.com or by heading over to YouTube and searching Farmhouse on Boone. You can follow along there. And I would love to have you following along. All right, well, don't forget to submit more questions if you have them. And I will see you in the next episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.